Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Hey Jake, thanks for having me.
That's my pleasure. Simple question to kick us off, and it can take us in all sorts of different directions, but what is it that you're working on at the moment that you're most excited about?
Ooh, so actually, recently I've just started working with the Bitcoin Collective here in the UK, which is kind of like a founded by Jordan Walker, and they did the first major UK Bitcoin conference. And so I recently joined the team working with Jordan and Jez. And what we're doing at the moment is really quite exciting in terms of pushing businesses into Bitcoin, or not necessarily pushing businesses into Bitcoin, but pushing Bitcoin within normal everyday businesses and helping them understand how Bitcoin can basically benefit their business and help stabilize their balance sheet and all sorts of things like that, which most businesses don't even know that they can actually hold Bitcoin. So it's quite exciting.
Absolutely. And and so what does the average customer look like in that sense? So you, and I'm totally with you. It's like a lot of people don't even realize that Bitcoin's an option. And not only is it an option, it's actually extremely viable option for lots of different reasons, not just having a store of value on the balance sheet of a company that's very effective, but also taking payments and finding extra customers, because there's a whole marketplace of people that want to use Bitcoin businesses. Let's pretend that I'm someone coming to the Bitcoin Collective, and I'm like, oh, like how can I incorporate Bitcoin? What do I look like? What kind of business have I got? And let's start there, because this is fascinating.
Yeah, so I mean, it's all very new at the moment. We're doing a conference later this week in Derby, and so we've got Liz Truss, the ex-Prime Minister, coming, and Peter McCormack. So like quite a few big names in the UK scene, and but yeah, it's not really in terms of the people we've been speaking to at the moment. It's not necessarily normal businesses that don't know anything about Bitcoin. It's more Bitcoiners who have a business and they're talking to us and like, oh, I never knew that I could own Bitcoin with my business. It's conversations like that. And yeah, so what we're doing now is trying to basically tap into that and show more businesses that it's something that you can do. It's not illegal. It's possibly a good idea. And there are ways to use it to your advantage.
Cool. I must say I saw this trend to some extent. I was involved with the Bitcoin Mentor when it first launched in Australia. Shout out to Dale who carried that on. Didn't work out for me personally, but that process was really interesting working with Mike and Ben in Canada. And it's like where your mind goes, your money follows. And many people are doing that on a personal level, but then it's like, well, actually, they're already running companies or they're employees in businesses. It's like, well, hang on. And you become almost like the gatekeeper to the Bitcoin world for a traditional business. And you go, okay, well, this is working really well on my personal P&L. How can I impact it everywhere else? And so, Alex, that's really cool. So, is that now full time you're working in Bitcoin?
Yes, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because I heard you say previously, when I was watching some of your content, that you had a day job and that you were doing your content on the side. What was that? And this is always a really fun transition to talk through with people. It's like, okay, you're obviously really passionate about Bitcoin, but like, how do you get involved and how do you have it as your day job? So run me through like where you've been and how you've managed to go through those steps.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all been a bit of a whirlwind. I don't know how I've ended up where I have. It's one of those I have imposter syndrome most of the
Okay.
time. But so I've just turned 30 recently. And I was one of those classic kids that went to school, didn't know what to do. Finished school, was kind of put down the route of going to university. Again, still didn't know what I wanted to do. Didn't really have any particular passion or anything like that. Didn't exactly know what to pursue. So ended up doing something completely with, well, something that really isn't of any interest to me. So I was a landscape architect. Basically,
Random.
yeah, completely. I think the logic at the time was, oh, maybe I could design skate parks. That'd be cool.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, looking back, like, I should have given everything a lot more thought before jumping in, but it is what it is. You can't take anything back. Just got to keep pushing forward. So I did that, wasn't particularly enamored with it, and just followed it through, got a degree, and was like, okay, well, I better use the degree. It's probably not going to help me get another job because it's so niche. So I did that, and just basically worked a job as a landscape architect for about 6 years, maybe 6.5 years. Mm-hmm. Almost exactly at the same time as starting that, I was like, I need a side hustle. And I'd been investing in the stock market since I was about 17, when I was still at school. Just like my dad showing me things and then just sort of running with it. And at that point I was like, well, I know a fair amount about investing. So started a YouTube channel talking about really basic investing stuff, compound interest and investing in index funds or maybe not, or whatever it is. And so then I was doing that on the sidelines, and I was one of those people that heard about Bitcoin and was like, nah, this is just a load of rubbish. Because I had one friend. No, exactly. It's like, I was just so indoctrinated by, you need a business, that obviously businesses make sense. They make money and then they pay profits to their shareholders. Makes sense. It's like, why would I want something that does nothing, or something that I just don't understand? Because to be fair, I just didn't do the research. And I had a friend that was bugging me to buy some Bitcoin. I eventually did, just before it must have been about 2021, before FTX blew up. Probably about 6 months
on the way down, baby.
Oh yeah. So that was my first real step into Bitcoin. I just bought a very speculative position, and then I heard about BlockFi. I was like, okay, awesome. So I'll put my tiny amount of Bitcoin, and I bought Ethereum as well at the time. So I put all of it into BlockFi, and then the whole thing collapsed with FTX. So I lost all of that. And so that must have been November 22, I think. And then it kind of took me a couple of months to regather myself. It's like, oh, what have I done? Just feeling sorry for myself and just feeling like an idiot. And so it's the start of the new year that I just eventually started learning about Bitcoin. I was like, I wanted to work out what had gone wrong. And through that learning, listening to podcasts, I just came to the conclusion that most people do, that Bitcoin has value. It is money. And it was a long, long, slow process. So it was about 6 months to a year of just constant listening to podcasts, not really understanding everything, just trying to take on as much information as possible. And it kind of opened Pandora's box and made me realize, I don't know anything about money. I've been playing games in the stock market looking for percentage gains, but like, it means nothing because your money's being debased faster than the rate that you're making returns. So yeah, it's just a kind of oh shit moment for me, and it kind of changed everything. I was like, oh, I just, if you feel like everything you've been taught is just a lie. And yeah, from that point onwards, it was just sort of keep going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. Went to my first conference, met Jack Mallers and all sorts of other huge names in Bitcoin, and I was just like, this is insane. Like, how am I surrounded by these people, just in with a conference of less than 500 people? And you go up and speak to someone and they all have the time to talk to you and they want to know about what you're doing. And it's like, these people are just the nicest people I've ever met. Genuine, super intelligent, super switched on. And they just seem to genuinely care. And I just felt like that moment was one of the points where I was like, this is where all of the best people are, and I just want to be around them. And
it's a cool feeling, isn't it? Yeah. You go, oh, what are they doing? This feels different.
Yeah, completely.
And not to hijack your story, Alex, but just so much of that resonates with me in terms of suddenly things just start to make sense. You're like, oh, hang on, what do you mean there's an option that says you can just save money? And what do you mean saving and investing aren't the same thing? What are you talking about? You have to invest. It's like, no. There's this whole school of economics, the Austrian School of Economics, that happily explains to you what money is. And whoa, it's just this massive moment. I agree. We got lots in common. I'm going to dig through all of this, Alex. Wind the clock back, though. I'd love to know. So Dad was like, mate, get into the stock market. How did he know about the stock market? And what were you guys investing in at the time? And what kind of analysis were you doing on different things?
Yeah, so when my dad was in probably about my age, he basically started investing his own money when not many people would do that. Most people were like trusting
financial advisors.
Yeah. Yeah, and he just started doing it. I don't actually know why, but he eventually, I can't exactly remember the story, but he got some payout or something that went into his pension, and it was one of those schemes where you get a big payout and it goes into a pension scheme, and he decided to take it for himself to manage rather than letting it touch this scheme, and he invested all of the money himself. And I think it was probably one of the best decisions he made. Mm. So then when I was growing up, when I was still at school, he just sort of thought that I might be interested in it. So he started talking to me about it, showed me a few things. And it wasn't investing in any individual companies. It was just what they called. It's been such a long time ago since I've invested in the stock market. I'm kind of forgetting it all, but... I think his main thing
is passive investing, like investing in indexes and things like that.
Yeah, no. So it wasn't that. It was investment trusts. So they're actively managed, but not open-ended funds.
Okay.
And it was just basically finding winners in the UK mainly.
Mm.
So there are a couple.
I mean, in a way, though, Alex, it doesn't really matter what that specific use case was, to be honest. If you can't remember, don't stress. It's more just like getting a flavor for things. It's like, oh, okay, this is something you could point your energy and attention at. And then how it evolves. Because like the idea of a landscape architect who's investing is like, that's fucking niche. Like, there's probably a lot of landscape architects out there, but how many of them on the side are thinking about these other areas that you had an interest in? And I always love that how... we don't really realize, but we're all extremely unique because we all have these different life experiences that blend together to make us who we are. And we're all totally different. And what I love doing is learning from them. So, and to only be 30 now is great in that you've already figured all this stuff out. Like a lot, there'll be people in their 40s and 50s that haven't asked the simple questions that you've been able to ask. And that's why I also always say that information travels unfairly through markets. Like, we are bloody lucky to be having this conversation right now in the knowledge that actually you don't need to invest in investment trusts any longer. You don't have to take the counterparty risk. You don't have to trust a financial advisor. You don't even need a pension fund. You just got to just buy the stuff called Bitcoin.
100%.
Another thing that you mentioned, Alex, that I'd love to chime off, though, is then, so you mentioned... You had this point where you're like, oh, I've been lied to. What are you referring to when you referenced that, and how did it feel?
Well, it's one of those things. It's one small part. So I kind of learning about Bitcoin taught me about money, and I didn't understand money. Mm. I then read Lynn Alden's book, Broken Money.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, great book. And it's just going through all of that makes you realize how much you don't know. And I've always been one of those people that I was an infuriating child at school because I wouldn't get into massive trouble. But if I didn't understand the logic behind a rule, I wouldn't follow it.
Hmm.
So I was just always questioning stuff. And if I could understand how it works, then sure, that makes sense. I'll do that. But like I was constantly being told to tuck my shirt in or something like that. It's like, but why? What? Why does it make any difference to you? That doesn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of the same sort of, because I've had that sort of mentality to things, I've always kind of questioned a lot of things. And then learning about money, seeing that everything that you've sort of been spoon-fed isn't actually the case, and that actually questioning things is the best thing to do to understand how things work. And so, yeah, I'm kind of rambling, but that realization with money sort of started breaking everything else down. And it's like, okay, how does everything else work? Mm. So the money isn't what we've been told it was. And then that's made me think about everything else. So I'm now questioning food, and like most Bitcoiners do. It's like, okay, just because a food is sold in the supermarket on the food shelf, that doesn't mean it's actually food. It's probably 90% plastic or something like that. I mean, obviously that's not the case, but I mean, it's not too far wrong with all the chemicals they put in. And it's just, you just believe that the people in charge have your best interests at heart. And for me, learning about Bitcoin and then realizing how the world actually works was that sort of complete breakdown in my trust in all systems.
You're like, hang on a second. So if the money's not true, what else do I know that someone wants me to know?
Yeah.
Or why, or the simple question, like, why do I know what I know? Like how conditioned am I? And you don't, we'll probably never have an answer in some ways, but I'd love to hear more about what, like specifically what was it about money that you didn't understand? Like some of the real kind of aha moments where you're like, oh, that actually doesn't make, like, I'm not tucking my shirt in here, mate. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So I was always a saver when I was younger. I was always really good at saving money.
Mm.
And I understood interest and that the banks pay you interest or whatever. But I never understood any of the intricacies about it. So understanding that the bank doesn't own your money, you deposit cash into the bank and they don't actually have it. That was a huge moment. It's like, well, okay, because I just assumed that they take your money, they maybe lend it out, and then because of that, they can generate a return for you. But that's not the case. They just create infinite amount of money whenever they want. So that was a big one. Oh, what else? Understanding that money needs certain properties to make it have any value. And I didn't know about the gold standard until learning about Bitcoin. So all of that was just a huge rabbit hole as well. Learning about gold and its scarcity properties and coming off the gold standard and how that we're all just using paper money that is created out of thin air.
It is an extraordinary lie in many ways.
Yeah, like,
completely. Oh, you're being paid in this paper that's valuable. But why?
And I remember going, once I'd sort of become a crazy Bitcoiner, I would go into my day job and obviously talk about
Bitcoin. Can I sort your landscape out, mate? Come on.
Yeah, I was trying to like tell everyone.
Have you heard about this thing called Bitcoin?
Everyone's just looking at me like, you are just mental. And I'm like, but if you just dollar cost average, like a tiny bit, blah, 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 blah. And I just remember getting a comment back, like, I'll stick to my real money, thanks. And I just thought,
yeah, wow. Like,
this is exactly it. This, I was that person. And we just need to try and get more people to realize this, the huge Ponzi scheme that we're all a part of.
But somehow that's where podcasts, you already touched on this, like that's where the conferences are just so powerful as an experience, because you run down this rabbit hole and you're like, oh my God, there's other people talking about this stuff, and you can find them online in the depths of God knows where, but you can find them. And then you go to a physical event and you're like, oh my God, these are probably some of the most positive, fittest, smartest people I've ever seen in one room. And there's a very healthy appetite for risk, for let's say, not tucking the shirt in and going, well, what are you talking about? Like, why would I do that? And it's taught me so much as well. Whoa. And so as a landscape architect, I think I'd put that into the bracket of an interesting business in the sense that people are always going to need that service. So if you were a landscape architect and you did get into Bitcoin, one of the better approaches is often actually continue with your area of expertise and DCA. So out of interest, were you just like, I have to work in this thing full time. I'm not interested in landscape architecture at all. Because most people that I meet, when they fall down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, there's not a huge amount of disposable capital sitting around to like reallocate, supposedly. It's just that every month I get paid. It's like, okay, well, every Monday, just pump as much into Bitcoin as you can. And yeah. I now know, I can think on the top of my head, like four or five characters that I met at Bitcoin meetups now 5 years ago who were accountants or engineers of some form, electricians, and they're now working for themselves, either traveling or setting up their own things because they DCA'd in Bitcoin for a cycle and a half. It works, essentially. You just were fed up as a landscape architect, perhaps? Like, because I still think that's a very valid strategy. So like, continue doing what you're doing, but incorporate Bitcoin into that and your options grow, essentially.
Yeah, definitely. If I was passionate about that industry, I probably would have stayed. But it was one of those things. I never enjoyed it. I was always just sort of turning up because I didn't know what else.
On you for recognizing that, though, because also like a lot of people don't. They'll just continue in autopilot.
Yeah, but I mean, I was constantly looking over the years, like, what is my exit strategy from this? And I just couldn't work it out. And Bitcoin just sort of, it was a bit of an accident, really, because I just started making videos about it, because obviously I was making videos about investing, and then I felt like a complete fraud to carry on making videos about investing. So obviously everything just turned Bitcoin focused. And then I met a bunch of really interesting people and made some really good connections just from doing that. And so it almost seemed like a mistake to not give up my previous job, because I was ending up...
You're wasting your time.
Yeah. And I was able to network and meet loads of other people and actually build some really good connections. And I just thought it was a good opportunity to move at the time that I did. And it's one of those things. I always think if I was passionate about a 9-to-5 job versus starting a business, you'd probably be better off just sticking at the 9-to-5 job unless you are really certain on your business. Because if you're just stacking Bitcoin, you're probably going to do very well over a 5-year period. But the risk of starting a business in this economy is, the odds are pretty against you, especially in the UK. So I kind of agree with what you're saying. There's nothing wrong with sticking to a 9-to-5. Just for me, it was just too much, really.
Well, and that's the fun bit, right? It's your life. You do whatever the fuck you want. And basically anyone that ever gives you advice is giving you advice based on what worked for them. And there's absolutely no reason that it will work for you. It just happened to work for them.
Yeah.
So as much as I love a good business book, in particular, like a good biography or whatever. Like, how did that person and that business become what it is today? And you can go and read about it. And you're like, interesting. Like a great book I read from an investing perspective recently was around the founder of SoftBank. And basically, Korean migrant in Japan builds this massive tech business and ends up funding some, crazy bets with it was like the $100 billion VC fund that they set up, and it was full of like Saudi investors and just mental. Like, how do you get into that position? And people do, right? They just take different step. And what they would recommend to you to do isn't necessarily right for your personal situation. And so making that call for yourself is always the key. The Yeah, so great. So getting out of that, done. Making videos, and this is something that I'm really passionate about too. In fact, we probably wouldn't be talking if we weren't both quote-unquote content creators. So, and I like to think of it as being your own brand, that there is literally no reason to stop anyone from putting content out. Like if you've got a mobile phone, you can make a video and you can post it. And there's obviously tons of nuance to like how you do it and where you do it and what your strategy might be. But why did you start creating content in the first place? And when I had a flick through your YouTube channel recently, it was so interesting that you had videos that were like 5, 6 years old that had nothing to do with Bitcoin at all. And then obviously Bitcoin's become a big part of the journey you've been on. And in some ways, it's a really nice kind of rear view mirror on the proof of work that you've been through. So why did you start making content? And, you know, what's the fun part of it for you?
Yeah, so I actually made videos when I was at school, when I was like 14, 15, 16. Me and my friends used to make gaming videos. And it was kind of fun though. I kind of felt like a little entrepreneur because the whole goal was try and get monetized on YouTube. And we ended up making a video that got like 800,000 views, which at the time was
wow, was
huge. And but then I kind of was like, I'm over this. I'm going to uni. I'm growing up, and just left it all. And I kind of always thought it was a fun thing to do. And I kind of enjoyed the sort of personal creativity that you can have. And so I kind of just wanted to do it while I was getting older, and then just finally pulled the trigger and was like, okay, I might make complete garbage content, but I'm not going to enjoy sitting in front of a camera, but it'll be good to push myself out of my comfort zone. It might make me better at public speaking. That might be a win. And if all goes well, I might make some money. So I kind of thought like, yes, it's going to be a lot of effort, but even if it all goes horribly wrong, I'm still potentially learning some skills. And so that was kind of the rationale for it. And just trying to push myself to a point where I'm not super comfortable and just try and create some things that that I think will be helpful and educational. But
And they clearly have been, Alex. I mean, some of the traction that your videos have got have been great. Plus, I mean, as we started the episode, well, when did you start working with Bitcoin Collective? Have you actually even started, or you just signed?
Yeah, just the last couple of months.
Yeah, so cool. Okay, so you do you think that opportunity would have arisen if you hadn't started creating content?
No, that's the amazing thing. Like, absolutely not. And yeah, before that, cool. Yeah, like I've got a whole list of experience now that I would never have had if I didn't decide to make YouTube videos about investing in the stock market or whatever it is. And it's just crazy because that is literally the proof of work. If you're just showing the world that you're committed to doing something, you're putting yourself out there and people do see it eventually. Even though it feels like a long slog because I started 6 years ago, but.
Well, and that is, I mean, 6 years is a long time, but I think what's cool is that it's 6 years ago. What's the right way of saying this? Sometimes it's the journey, not the destination.
Yeah.
So actually you don't necessarily need to know what the outcome has to be, but just be comfortable in the knowledge that you're going somewhere interesting. And you didn't even know that Bitcoin was interesting. You didn't know that you get a job in a Bitcoin company. You didn't know you'd be buying Bitcoin. You didn't know you'd be educating about Bitcoin. But you started anyway 6 years ago. Okay, so what would be some of the highlights that you've had in terms of experiences because of putting yourself out there and testing yourself?
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, last week with the Bitcoin Collective, we were at the UK's largest business show, I think, at the Excel Centre. Mm-hmm. And we had a stand there talking to entrepreneurs and business owners about Bitcoin, which is just kind of mind-blowing. And a few weeks before that, I was invited by Bitcoin Policy UK to go and help them in Liverpool at the Labour Party conference, which, again, just completely bizarre thing for me. It's like, why am I being invited to this? I'm not really political, but this is really important work that, and yeah, I'm helping, and it's a great thing to be a part of, and just jumping into all sorts of strange pools of and networks.
Interesting. Talk to me about that as an experience then. So the Labour Party conference is an annual get together of Labour Party followers, or what even is it? And explain as well what Bitcoin Policy UK do. And I'd be intrigued as to how they're funded, because it's very interesting to have. I mean, here in Australia, just to give you a brief bit of context of why I'm interested in this, is the Australian Bitcoin Industry Body. That I know some of the guys that run that. It's essentially a spokesperson for the Bitcoin industry in Australia. So there's Bitcoin exchanges here, and there's, you know, Bitcoin wallets here, and there's all sorts of stuff going on. But it's a kind of, you know, there's a board, there's a chairman, there's a strategy behind, like, you know, commenting on different policy that's coming out of the Australian government, etc. So yeah, interested. Keep talking about the Labour conference and also what Bitcoin Policy UK do.
Yeah, so I think it's similar. So it's a think tank, I think, is the phrase. But they're all basically volunteers and just basically trying to ensure that the UK government puts in better policy for Bitcoin. And they write letters to the MPs and try and just help boost the what's the word? I'm kind of losing my train of thought.
It would be to ensure that the Bitcoin network has a official and professional voice when, you know, discussing politics essentially or policy. It's like, what laws are you creating? How does that impact the Bitcoin industry? And it's fascinating in that you know, Bitcoin doesn't have a marketing department. Like, if we were crypto podcasters, we would be being paid shit tons to promote whatever token that said crypto business had created and was pumping wherever they're pumping it. And the incentive is to ignore the design of the crypto token and to just spout whatever nonsense they're asking you to talk about in favor of being paid. Bitcoin can't do that. Like, there is no way of paying a policy think tank to go to the UK government and say, guys, go and lobby them and say, we think that your new rules are a load of bullshit. And that's why it's so crazy when you see things like Ripple in Washington, D.C. doing whatever they're doing. It's just nuts when you start peeling away those layers. But it's really cool to see how it can be, like, totally free market, right? It's a think tank. It's self-funded. There's volunteers, and they're promoting an algorithm / protocol for money. How cool is that?
Yeah.
And so at a conference for a political party, I mean, basically, I imagine that's just one massive donations spin up. They're basically just trying to get funding from people.
Yeah. So it's an annual event. I think all of the major political parties do them. But it's just all the MPs and politicians give speeches, and a lot that it's like a trade show in a way. So there's lots of stands set up of businesses basically trying to lobby the politicians in one way or another, trying to get funding for their project or trying to change policy and just try and talk to the right people who they think might be able to make a difference. And so I guess that's kind of exactly the same as what we were doing. Just hoping and trying to speak to people within the government, the active government, who might be able to take Bitcoin a bit more seriously and at least listen, open their ears and hear what we have to say, rather than just, I mean, you mentioned Ripple. I think last week there was, I think, one of the politicians who's there at the moment was meeting Ripple last week in Asia somewhere. And it's just like Bitcoin Policy UK have reached out to that specific person so many times and got no response. And it seems like that Ripple just sort of chucks some money at her and she's like, okay, cool, I'll listen. We're now pushing forward innovation and payments. It's like, no.
Yeah, but I mean, talk about like tucking your shirt in. It's like, that's bullshit. Everyone knows it's bullshit. Come on.
Yeah.
And so when you're at that stand, like, interesting. So did anyone pay any attention? Or was it like this huge conference and like just no one's even talking to the Bitcoin guys?
Yeah, no, actually, it was quite a busy stand. There were lots of volunteers there. And so we had a very busy stand because there were lots of us there. And I think because of that, lots of people were coming up and they would see the words Bitcoin, think, Bitcoin? And there were kind of a few scenarios. It'd be like, I do not like Bitcoin, so I'm going to go tell them that I don't like Bitcoin. And I'm going to go argue with them and tell them that they shouldn't be here and shouldn't be talking about Bitcoin because I know someone that's been scammed by Bitcoin. That's usually what they're saying. And then there are some people that are secretly curious and like, oh yeah, I'm from one of the other stands and I run a business and can I secretly talk to you? And I'll take off my shirt just so look, you can't see any of my logo.
My lanyon, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And there were quite a few of those. And then there were just some people that seemed interested that just didn't really know much about it. And then it's a real mix, but overall the reception was really positive, which I personally was quite surprised about because I thought it was going to be just very, very negative.
Yeah, you're going to the lion's den in a sense. And it's that obvious misalignment of incentive in that the reason that Keynesianism has been so popular is because monetary policy makers and political scientists have been able to jump into bed together and fund each other's central planning, basically. You know, it's like you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back, and we can sell it to everyone for their, you know, greater good. And we'll socialize the losses on the back end. And it's even that phrase, socializing the losses, like when I first heard that, I was like, what? That's like one of those things you touched on, I think, probably. It's like you're listening to podcasts, you're feverish in terms of your consumption of this information around this subject. Like, what is money? And it's like, oh, inflation is a stealth tax. You know, the first time you hear that, you're like, what? What are you talking about? No, inflation is good. Inflation is how the central bank keeps the whole economy going. You got to have about 2% inflation. And you find yourself like literally repeating the shit that you were told. And I, you know, wrote in a macroeconomics exam at uni, but who told you that? Well, the guy that's getting paid by the bloke that prints the money. Hello. And so I wonder when going to conferences like that, you know, how seriously can they really take Bitcoin? And it's that process of like, on the one hand, they just don't understand it. And if it took you and I multiple years of getting a bunch of things together and realizing, oh, this is valuable, then the average 60-year-old Labour MP has got absolutely no idea what Bitcoin is in terms of the threat to their funding. Like they don't understand that it's going to obsolete central banks and therefore it's going to drastically reduce how a government funds itself. But also they'll be so skeptical straight away, right? It's like, it's something new. It's like, this isn't interesting. Okay. So was there anyone at that conference then that was of any importance, do you think? Or was it just punters just coming and having a chat? Because like, how high can Bitcoin get in conversations in government, do we think? Like, you know, the UK government's as broke as anyone else.
Yeah, I think I wasn't able to see what everyone was doing all the time. But from my experience, it seemed like it was not really people with a lot of say. And there were some MPs that came and had a picture with the stand, but it seemed like they were being sort of led around by their assistant. Like, right, we need to go get a picture here, here. And they're sort of just like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, they're like,
politics.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And So it's more just everyday people, really, that we were talking to. I felt like, but yeah, it's funny because the whole ethos of Labour is, or was like socialist, whereas Bitcoin is almost the complete opposite. Everything you get in Bitcoin world, you have to put in work for, and nothing's redistributed. So it's complete opposite to the sort of ethos. And yeah, so like it's an uphill battle, definitely, speaking to the Labour Party for sure.
But. Very cool. And so, Alex, so in the months to come then, are you, is the Bitcoin Collective like specifically asking you to go out and create content on their behalf, or is it something that you're just going to continue to do off your own bat? Like, what are your plans in terms of that?
No, so content-wise, that's all separate. Okay. I'm just sort of joining the team to help try and build out the things that we're working on. But yeah, content-wise, I just need to try and get my ass in gear and keep pushing it out, because that's the struggle, just trying to manage it. And as I'm sure you're aware, it's just difficult to try and keep it all going with content, because you put out one thing one week, but then you've got to just keep it all going, keep the flywheel going.
Well, yeah, I mean, I must confess, in my experience lately, I've made a big change in how I'm doing it. So when I launched my latest podcast in January, I came kind of flying out the gates, hired a guy as a producer, hired a guy as an editor, which helped hugely to increase the volume of content I was able to get out. But I made a mistake in that I didn't have a revenue plan in place necessarily. And so suddenly 10 months in, I was like, oh, I'm carrying all this cost each month, which is essentially potential Bitcoin. Why? And when I started looking seriously at like different revenue options, audience wasn't nearly big enough to sell a sponsorship contract of any meaningful amount. And I'm very dubious of sponsorship contracts in general, because you're like, who are these companies? Like, what are they actually doing? And I know, and I won't mention who any of these people are, but I've had conversations with other people who are already podcasting with successful channels, and they're promoting businesses that they don't like, but they've got contracts in place with them. And that's how the show works, right? You've got an advertising contract. It's like, okay, that doesn't make sense to me. And I didn't want to then equally go and create a big coaching program, because I actually spend most of my day homeschooling my kids. I just don't have the time to commit to 20 grand's worth of coaching for someone, because it's that, you know, you've got to fulfill this thing. I'm like, shit, Jake, you've really dug yourself a hole here, mate. How are you going to get out of this? And so I decided to go very lean and really home in on what I care about, which is then another problem in this space, which is the platform risk. And so this podcast, for example, will only go out on RSS feeds and on Noster. And I'm not even bothering with YouTube or X or Instagram or anything going forwards, which I'm actually really excited about. It doesn't make any sense to a traditional content lens, which would be like just as many eyeballs as you can possibly get, and then sell sponsor contracts. But I think it'll be more fun for me. And that's basically just, I'll be doing a conversation a week that I produce and publish myself. And that way it should be easier to keep the momentum going. Because otherwise you get burnt out. Like the YouTube algorithm is a hungry bitch. And it's like, you know, ooh, one video is gone. Next. And I guess I personally reached a point, it's like, why am I doing this? I want to do it to have fun, to have interesting and sophisticated conversations. I don't want to do it so that YouTube wins. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, does any of that resonate at all? I want to make, maybe you should make a long-form podcast, Alex.
Yeah, possibly. I've thought about it, but I'm always worried about just trying to spin too many plates at one time.
Absolutely. And you wouldn't want to do that. I wouldn't suggest that, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's really cool that you're doing it all on Noster, because ultimately that's feeding into what you believe in and the world that you want to live in, I assume.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, and it's just, if you're sticking to the mainstream platforms, you're just feeding it. And like, ultimately, we're all losing if we keep these things alive. Like, YouTube is, yeah, like you say, the algorithm is just ridiculous. I think it's changed recently, because it used to be very different from my experience. And now it's like, it doesn't really matter if you have a following or not. Some videos will just do really well. Some videos will do terribly.
Hmm.
And yeah, trying to navigate all of that. And it just takes you away from the reason you were doing it in the first place, which is to create something that you think is important and interesting.
Yeah, that was what I think annoyed me the most, actually, was I found that I'd suddenly got myself to a place where I was trying to win the game, the algorithm game. I was like, no, Jake, that's not why you started this process. And I'd also wrapped it up in this whole, like, oh, you can build a massive business out of this, which you might be able to on a long enough time horizon. But that wasn't, again, that wasn't why I started it. So, yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? So, and just to ask some more detail on how you create your videos, Alex, because I really enjoyed some of the ones that I watched. Like, are you using AI, for example, like helping to write scripts and do better hooks and titles? And do you just riff about what you're finding interesting? Or like, how do you structure your episodes and things like that?
Yeah, I don't use AI as much as I should.
I don't think that's a bad thing, by the way.
Yeah.
People know, or to my experience, you can tell, right? I started getting, for example, emails from random addresses, which really detail about like content that I've put out in the past, but there's just no way that it wasn't written by a computer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, no, you didn't go and read that on my article or listen. Do you know what I mean? So I think definitely. In some ways that's not a bad thing. So do you script it all though, or how do you do it?
Yeah, so I'm a massive victim of my own frugality. Like, I really struggle spending money on anything. So I do everything myself, and
cool.
I use a little bit of AI for like proofreading scripts and how are you structuring things and title suggestions, but I pretty much come up with the ideas and everything myself and spend time scripting and everything, but just sort of run it through almost like a spell check.
Mm-hmm.
And just to save myself time. But yeah, I mean, people are using it for basically everything, like for video editing and all of that. But I still use normal editing software, which I've tried to like test out which is actually faster, and I found that going the traditional method made no difference to my time. But yeah,
always that strange fear though, isn't there, Alex, that like, okay, AI, edit this episode for me, what's it cut out?
Yeah,
I don't know. And equally, like, and I could be wrong here, but like, I don't listen to podcasts any faster than 1x. Generally speaking, I don't listen to any content faster than what it's created at. And that's because I believe that I get more from the conversation if I listen to it properly. And you get all the context, which gives you then, you know, if you've gone through like a 2-3 hour long podcast and you're like, at the end, they're talking about something that actually makes the whole thing make sense. Like, ah, that's why I've just spent all my time listening to this. Which, if you overly edit things or you speed it up too much, you don't catch that. Now, that opens up, obviously, another conversation. Like, in the future, with AI, the way it's going, every single problem you face, you can, within a matter of seconds, ask a bespoke question for the problem that you're in and a solution. Why will you do all this passive consumption of content? Like, you've already mentioned you listen to tons of podcasts to kind of upskill. Like, we may not ever need to do that again. Yeah. So I wonder if that market demand might diminish. I don't know. But sorry, I cut you off, Alex. You're going to say something.
No, definitely. I'm just thinking about what you're saying. So
please.
I sometimes get comments on my videos and it's like, oh, how do I do this in terms of how do I buy Bitcoin through this? Blah, 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 blah. I'm having issues with this. It's like, you don't need me to make a video. You can just ask ChatGPT and it'll literally give you the answer. And it's kind of exactly that. But I guess there is the market for it still, because people want trust a human maybe a bit more, maybe not. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. There may be something about just watching a video, you can just switch off your brain. You don't have to read as much and it feels easier. Like if I wanted to learn how to buy Bitcoin for the first time, I could ask ChatGPT, but I'm dyslexic. So reading has never been, it's never come easy to me. So seeing a whole script of how to do it isn't going to be as easy as watching a YouTube video where I can see someone going through it.
It depends on how you learn, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I'm very much a visual learner, and I'm sure there must be lots of people out there who are similar.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? The comments, yeah, how many of those comments could just be pumped into an AI and therefore you don't need to interact? At the same time, though, I think this is where Bitcoin's an interesting one, because I saw a really good post recently on Nost that was a guy basically saying, look, Bitcoin podcasts are fucking pointless. Bitcoin conferences are fucking pointless. In fact, Bitcoin is really just not doing very well right now. Just look at how AI has been completely, like, they created a product, they made it better. It's now everyone's using it all the time. It doesn't have a conference, doesn't have a fucking podcast, everyone's just doing it. That's a fucking amazing product launch. And you're like, I kind of get your point. I'll push back. One, I get lots of value from podcasts. Two, I get people contacting me the whole time saying they've really valued my podcast. So good for you, mate. You can have that opinion, but in my opinion, you're wrong. There's obviously two sides to this camp, isn't there? It's like the people are like, look, mate, just ask ChatGPT. But when it comes to your money, you need to trust what you're doing. And having someone who's already been through the process you want to go through is key. And that's why you get all of these interesting consultancy businesses in and around Bitcoin that have popped up, because it's like, hang on a second, I adopted Bitcoin myself. These are all the steps I went through. This was shit. I fucked this one up. Don't do that. Do this. Pay me a grand for 4 hours of work and you miss all the bullshit. And it makes sense.
And if you fall too far down the rabbit hole of using AI for everything, when it comes to your money, you're basically falling into the same fiat trap as before. Where you're just sort of trusting that it's giving you the right information, whereas and this all that stuff with it hallucinating and things like that.
Yeah, and actually, Alex, this makes me think. Recently, I did some research around personal finance, and I've had it on my mind for probably 2 or 3 years, like a book. I really want to write a book, and I haven't done it. So, Jake, stop fucking talking about writing and just get on and do it. Is basically the situation, but. Amazingly, all of the most popular books in personal finance, none of them mention Bitcoin. Like, you look at the top 10 bestsellers in personal finance, it's like literally none of them. One of which I read recently, which is called The Psychology of Money. And their solution to the wealth problem is passive investing via index trackers and government bonds. And you're just like, that's fucking stupid. Look at the counterparty risk. Look at the purchasing power erosion. Look at the real inflation rate. I disagree. And that's kind of what AI is like. You know, you go to AI and say, how do I look after my money? And it's more than likely going to be like, okay, let me scan the top 10 bestsellers in personal finance. Oh, well, they're all talking about the 60-40 stock bond portfolio that's worked incredibly well as interest rates have gone down and down and down and down and down for 50 years. And they printed tons of money. But like Bitcoin is still so small that there's not many people out there talking about it. And I think that's possibly where having, not that it's a real connection, but like people, I'm speaking for myself. I have podcasts that I like. I feel like I'm almost friends with some of these people because I've listened to hours and hours. Like you mentioned Peter McCormack, for example. I've got a tracker somewhere for every piece of Bitcoin content I've been through. And I met Pete when he did the cheat code conference in Sydney. I was the MC, and I went and met a bunch of people in person, which was cool. And in the pub afterwards, I was like, let me figure it out. And I was like, I've listened to like 82 hours of what Bitcoin did, which I could tell from my spreadsheet. And he was like, that's not a flex. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, mate, I've done like 800 episodes. Fair enough. And some people have listened to all of them, right? And in that sense, you are kind of like friends with these people. So yeah, okay. From where I'm sitting, I'm very confident there's a place for content with people in the future.
Yeah, no, I 100%
it's
agree.
a really interesting one, isn't it? That's like, and that's really what Bitcoin does. It questions what you do with your time. Like, are you pointing your attention in the right direction? And so, speaking of which, like, so what's got you most excited then about the next kind of 12 months and the route you're now taking?
Honestly, it's just really exciting to be being able to work full time in Bitcoin.
Yeah, cool.
Because the first conference I went to, I felt like a fraud. I felt really odd about going to it because it's like, I've not been in Bitcoin for very long. I don't work in Bitcoin. I'm just interested and don't really know how everything works. I think at that point, I didn't really understand what GDP meant. I was like, this doesn't make sense. Like, try and make it make sense in my brain. And I
When was that,
couldn't.
Alex?
That was 2 years ago. That was cheat
Wow.
code
Yeah, cool.
in the
But
UK.
look, that's what's fun though, is look how much progress you've made in 2 years.
Yeah, and but speaking to other Bitcoiners, they also have similar imposter syndrome. I've from my experience, and it's like, actually, we're all just people. We're all just people who are interested in Bitcoin. It doesn't matter if you know how every intricate detail works. It doesn't matter if you know as much as this person. It's just we're all interested, and we all look at things from different angles, and we all have value to offer. And yeah, but yeah, I guess it's just. Yeah, working on this with the Bitcoin Collective, and hopefully we'll have a bull market. And
Yeah,
because
I mean
I have,
that's a tricky one right now. The price action, fucking hell.
yeah.
Yeah, which way are we going to go? Well, that is really a case of time will tell. We'll have to wait and see. I'm intrigued a bit more about the Bitcoin Collective because I don't know much about it until today. So it's essentially a consulting business that helps businesses incorporate Bitcoin.
Yes, it's all very, very new at the moment. But it's basically educational. So if people want to learn about Bitcoin, sorry, let me try that again.
That's right.
It's not night, it's early in the morning, so struggling a little bit. But basically, yeah, it's educational. So just trying to be that point of call for businesses who are interested in Bitcoin but don't know how to get it on their balance sheet, don't know how to buy it, don't know how to accept it. It's just being that point of call, and we can connect you with all the right places and experts.
Nice. And there's a business I was involved in here in Australia as well called the Bitcoin Advisor for a bit. And
Oh yes, yeah.
like Bitcoin Mentor in a way, the regularity with which you see a finance broker or a financial advisor on the high street who are punting fiat loans or 1% discretionary advisor type setups. That is the frequency with which you will see a Bitcoin consultant in the future. We're just not even close to being there yet. Like you're lucky to find like one company that's doing okay in one country, let alone like every single high street. And that is in a sense of a reflection as to how early we actually are, because basically no one knows what Bitcoin is.
Yeah.
And you know, well, let's go back to talking about the price right now. So, you know, dipping down under $100,000, it's now November of 2025. Like the 4 year cycle thesis is like, well, maybe that's been and gone, right? The 126K US, that was the top. There's lots of people that are now selling into what they think is the bear market coming. And that could be true. But when you
Yeah,
zoom out
completely.
and you think about the fact that like every single high street is going to have some kind of Bitcoin advisor sitting on it, like you could be very wrong there. And money printer gets switched on, the whole cycle is actually pushed back to Q1, Q2 next year. And we could easily have like what's a 30, 35% drawdown from 126K, and it fucking rips to like two, three times where we are today. I don't know, and that's the fun part of following it. But like, how wild is that to think that there's going to be as many Bitcoin consultants in the future as there are currently financial advisors?
Are there though? Because I'm not sure I'd agree with that, because will you need as many Bitcoin advisors? Because some people will just, it'll just be money. So you're just holding the money. You don't need...
Great pushback. You won't need... If I think about my experience of kind of managing assets, you have an annual get together with your financial advisor who's being paid 1% a year to allocate you into whatever. Mm. You're right. With Bitcoin, it's just money. So it's just savings. And that human is automated away, essentially. So the purchasing power retention is done by the algorithm, not by a discretionary allocator. But financial services, I still think, will be needed. So people who are figuring out, okay, well, this is what I want to retire with, or this is my will, or, you know, you're still going to be buying and selling Bitcoin for real estate, perhaps, or for other equities, perhaps, or maybe, you know, there might be something else you're doing. So there's that.
Yeah, sure, actually. Yeah.
There'll be just like slightly different sets of financial services in the future, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah, good question in terms of volume. I don't know. One would assume that given Bitcoin, at least thus far in my experience, has performed better than any discretionary financial advisor could ever dream of, the heavy lifting will be done by Bitcoin itself for personal finance. And how you choose to interact with it in and around that will then be depending on how sophisticated you are or not, or equally how much Bitcoin you actually have. Because even within Bitcoin, you could have multi-sig, single sig, you could be with a custodian, you could be with someone like Anchor Watch and pay a percent per annum and have it insured, or, you know, any number, you could be getting collateral with someone, who knows. Mm-hmm. There's going to be tons of different ways of allocating your Bitcoin or storing your Bitcoin, and that will all require specific expertise.
That's the amazing thing, because all these things are being built now, and
yeah,
I don't know how anyone can't be just unbelievably bullish.
Yeah.
It's so amazing seeing the stuff coming out and what Block and Square are doing. It's just
that's
unreal.
Cool, isn't it?
Like, you can now spend dollars over Bitcoin. Mm. That's just, yeah.
Yeah, and so the merchant adoption one's a good one. So the Square payment terminal is used by 4 million merchants.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if that is a global stat or a US stat.
That's just US.
That's just the US. Interesting. And so the two businesses local to me that I'm friendly with the owners of, this was interesting, actually. They both use Square. One of them is a butcher and one of them is a cafe. And the butcher already has a wallet of Satoshi Bitcoin wallet set up and is very happy to receive Bitcoin for meat, which I often do, but was concerned because they're already treading a fine line with the government in terms of rearing regenerative and organic beef and pushing back on animal vaccinations and things. What if they accept Bitcoin via Square and their accounting purposes somehow like flags them? And they were concerned about if I use Square's Bitcoin feature, will that somehow pop up with the government somewhere and just gives me unnecessary attention? So that was a really interesting point in terms of the Square merchant adoption. So people just are like, oh, what if I get extra attention that I don't want? And the other one with the cafe, which is much more straightforward, is like, didn't even know it happened. So yes, the merchant feature that they've put out is, in my opinion, far more exciting than any strategic Bitcoin reserve announcement that a government's making, etc., because it's genuine product development and access to market that wasn't there. But I wonder how successful it will actually be, given those two, I admit, very anecdotal examples. Mm. But the Bitcoin newsreel goes wild. But like, what actually changes? Well, basically, there's still a huge educational hurdle for all people involved.
Yeah, I think that's what makes the Cash App integration so interesting, because you can just, you don't even have to own Bitcoin and you can spend dollars and it gets converted to Bitcoin on the merchant side.
Can you get Cash App in England?
They pulled out of the UK.
Okay. Not in Australia, not to my knowledge anyway. Yeah. So, and that feature is they can now pay a business. You can pay a business in Bitcoin using Cash App and not having any Bitcoin yourself. So if your yes. tab is $100 and you've got $100 in your Cash App, you can click pay in Bitcoin and you send $100. Cash App does the transfer themselves and the exchange. Yeah, wow. That's very cool, isn't it?
And so because obviously Jack Dorsey owns both, Cash App have the map of where all Square merchants that accept Bitcoin are located.
Yes.
So in Cash App, you can see where you can spend Bitcoin. You can go there and support them and convince others to get on the map.
Wow.
If you don't have Bitcoin, the merchant, say you're just a normal Cash App user, but you're at a Bitcoin accepting merchant, they could say, oh, how do you want to pay? If you pay in Bitcoin, slightly cheaper for us, so we might give you a discount. Not sure if that's technically legal, depending on where you are, but obviously they are going to be charging. It's going to be sent over Lightning, so it's going to be basically free rather than paying 3-5% for credit card
payment
fees.
Networks take. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so if you have Cash App but you have no Bitcoin, you'd be like, okay, I'll pay over Cash App then with Bitcoin, even though I don't have any Bitcoin. So you can get normal people spending dollars and the merchant accepts Bitcoin. And I don't know, I just think like the domino effect of something like that could be huge.
Could be huge. Yeah, and it makes me think actually where, from what you've explained about the Bitcoin Collective, this is exactly the kind of thing that you'd be good advisors on for people. It's like, okay, well, look, really easy, low-hanging fruit for any business is say that you accept Bitcoin, get yourself posted on this particular network and see if you get people turning up. Example that happened just today for me, actually. Shout out to Sam, who's my boxing coach. He's just setting up his physical boxing gym for the first time, having done it as like a roaming boxing coach from his car for a couple of years. And I'm like, you should just say on your website, I accept Bitcoin, and sign up for whichever, you know, Bitcoin map is relevant for where we are, because people who like spending Bitcoin will come to your business. It's like a whole marketplace of people out there that are looking to support other businesses that use it. And when you hear things like what you've just described with Cash App, that's just now just a ton more people that are looking at this stuff. Wow, interesting. Alex, just to take a slight change of direction here, I'm always interested in like how things feel. So the process of adopting sound money, of which Bitcoin is, it's very clear when you start digging into the kind of economics behind why it gives you a better outlook on the future and the ability to lower your time preference and things like delayed gratification, you know, actually living those things. Like, how different is your life in terms of how you feel and your future now versus maybe 5 years ago or pre-Bitcoin and like first running down the rabbit hole?
Yeah. Have you seen the video posted by Relay? I don't know how you actually say it. The Swiss exchange.
Relay. I had had a guy from Relay on. What the hell was his name? Can't remember. That's so bad.
Do you know the video I mean, though? It's like
no
life.
I'm going to look it up quickly.
Without Bitcoin.
Excuse me for a second. I'm normally really good with names. How can I not remember? He had a book called Crypto Assets that I started reading. Thomas, that's right. Okay. Shout out to Thomas, wherever he is. I still haven't finished his book. Damn it. There's just too many to read. Thomas Jaegers. Yeah, he just joined as a CFO. Relay is probably the most interesting European Bitcoin business I know of. I didn't invest in it or anything, but it's certainly something I looked at. Anyway, sorry. So Relay have a video. That's what you're referring to.
Yes. They put out a video in the last couple of weeks. It's just a short little video on X, all created in AI, I think. But it's just like life with Bitcoin and life without. And it's kind of got a side by side of two people. Well, the same person living the same life, going to work, coming home. But one is with Bitcoin, one is without. And the person without Bitcoin is just thinking they're miserable. They're going to work. They're tired. They're getting home. They're thinking about bills. They're working late. because they're worried about money and they're worried about getting fired and whatever it is. The person who's living with their sort of world backed by Bitcoin just goes to work, does what they need to do, goes out with their friends, does something fun, has a nice dinner, goes home, and just, I think that sums it up perfectly. Because it's not about you find Bitcoin and then you're rich. It's just a slow mental shift where you're not constantly worried and stressed about money. And I think that's how it's been for me. So obviously my generation find it's very difficult to get onto the property ladder. I think it's about 4.5 times couple salaries for the average house price in the UK.
That's combined couple salary.
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's just insane. And then you're kind of taught as you're growing up, you need to get onto the property ladder. That's what everyone's saying. And again, I kind of think that's just another thing that people don't question that they should. It's like, why are we just buying properties? Why do we all have to, like, is property just going up because we're all just buying it like sheep? But anyway, that's kind of a side point. But it's very difficult. So I think a lot of my generation and the younger generation as well, they're just quite nihilistic and there isn't a lot of hope. So you're just sort of living day to day. It's very hard to try and build something and progress up any sort of ladder, whether that's financial stability, whether that's a job. And for me, it's just been that sort of breathing space where I don't need to panic so much about money. I'm stacking Bitcoin. Everything I save is Bitcoin. I don't really hold fiat currency at all. And it just makes life so much easier. I don't need to think about the price of bread or anything like that. It's just gradually life just gets a little bit easier if you carry on working and saving. And it means, I mean, for me, one of the things that kind of helped make the decision easier about leaving my previous job was that work seemed to be encroaching on my personal life. And I think that's becoming more of a thing these days as well, where you're trying to be, the company you work for wants to tell you where you need to be, how you should work in the most efficient way, when actually, in many ways, that's a personal thing that you need to work out how you work in the most efficient way. And so it was kind of in the stage where it's like, right, people need to start coming back into the office 5 days a week, that sort of thing. And for me, I was thinking, this isn't the life I'm going to be able to be happy with. I don't want to be sat in an office 5 days a week being less productive than working, say, 3 days a week in an office and 2 days at home. And ultimately, I want to have a dog, which is a really random thing, but like, it's something I want. Like, but I'm not going to be able to do that if both me and my girlfriend are working full time in offices. And so without Bitcoin, I would have had to just suck it up and do all those things, I feel like. But with Bitcoin, it's been able to be like, it's given me the confidence to say no to certain things and push back on things I don't believe in and just have a bit more autonomy, which I think is really important for everyone to be able to have.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And it's we've been recording for 1 hour and 14 minutes, and that set of statements that you just made were the most powerful of the conversation so far. That's why I love long form podcasts. It's like, it all makes sense when you hear that. Essentially, it's helping give you additional options that enable you to be able to say, no, I'm not doing that. Fuck off.
Yeah.
And that is very, very healthy for everyone. Like, not just from a perspective of self-worth, but also like the life you get to build yourself. It's like, what do you want to create? Okay, well, now you might be able to have that chance. I think it's really important as well, this idea of like Bitcoin's not a get rich quick scheme. And that's been that's been pounded down by the price action at the moment as well, which people are like, oh, we thought we'd like probably twice this high. That was conservative in some people's eyes. But it's actually like, if you can show me a way that I can put my head down, be productive, keep what's mine, and it compounds over time, I'll choose that. I don't need crazy crypto gains in 2 years to then live in the Bahamas and sail a yacht around the world. That's I don't need that. I just need to know there's a way of actually surviving to then ha like essentially focus on thriving, which is what this is really all about. And so, Alex, so to ask then, how many of your friends have been through this journey that you just described of going from like quite well, I don't, you didn't say you were nihilistic yourself. I'm not going to put that on you, but you described many people of your generation being like that. When you say how you feel, do people get encouraged by that, or do they get more like triggered by it? But that can't be true.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot of my friends, they just don't want to hear about it.
Wow.
I think
What they prefer to be broke and in the pub, pissed and angry.
well, for me, when I was before Bitcoin, I just felt a bit hopeless. I kind of thought like life is going to be what it's going to be, and yeah, it's kind of a rigged game against you, but and I think some of my friends see the world like that, and I don't know exactly what they think, but I think they just think every time they hear Bitcoin, they just think, oh, like gambler, like I want to stick to my safe investments because you're actually just irresponsible, and I'm annoyed that it's paid off for you. I think that's probably more closer to what they think because they
Yeah,
don't
so
seem to want to have the
they're
conversations.
now envious of the success and pigeonhole it as your luck rather than potentially something that they could do. It's interesting, isn't it? Because
Yeah,
there's
because I
like there's
think
two
they're.
types of people in a way. There's people that go, huh, success leaves clues. Maybe I should just ask them how they did that, rather than being like, oh, fuck them. They're lucky. You know what I mean? It's so
Yeah.
interesting. Why are people like that? I don't know.
But I think the thing about Bitcoin is that people are just so. It's so ingrained in what they think that Bitcoin is probably scam adjacent, or there's something off about it, and so they just don't want to hear it. So they think you have just been at the casino and you've come out on top, but if I do that, I'm probably not going to. So like I just need to just ignore what you're doing because you are lucky, like whatever happened, it worked for you, but it's not going to happen for me because it's something I don't understand and I'm very scared of.
And the I don't understand phrase is always interesting because, like, okay, can you explain to me how fiat currency works?
Yeah.
How does the debt-based system function? What's fractional reserve banking? What? Leave me alone, you fucking weirdo. Like, that's just the most retarded explanations to why you wouldn't look at something is I don't understand it, but I don't understand how an iPhone works. I don't understand how an internal combustion engine works. I don't understand how tons of stuff actually works, but I use it every day. And even that annoys people when you talk to them about it. It's a very, very interesting time because at some stage, the more that you learn about Bitcoin, like, well, first of all, the more you know, the more you buy. That's like a clear trend that I see in absolutely everyone within the space. The more you learn, the more you buy, the more you wish you'd bought earlier is also like people today at like $95,000 are gonna absolutely hate themselves for not buying more in the not too distant future. Now, what is that? 2 years, 3 years? I don't know, but suddenly that's gonna look really cheap. What's interesting though is at some point that general angst that you described, that's going to be a problem because a population is going to see this subset who they're going to consider lucky or have been to the casino and I can't go there, become wealthier and wealthier, more and more independent, happier and happier is a trend I've also seen. More and more kids as well, like people having big families again because they can actually think, yeah, like, oh, I can plan for that now. I can afford it. And they're going to be really pissed off. And democracy functions as a popularity contest. So I wonder, like, is it going to be a case of like, all right, Bitcoin's now part of, you know, the US in particular is leading the charge, I think, in terms of its policy, frankly. So, you know, there's very clear precedent around code as free speech in the US. And therefore, like, actually censoring Bitcoin is going to be pretty hard. And they're getting better at ingratiating Bitcoin miners and all this kind of stuff going on. But aren't there going to be tons of American voters that are really pissed off with a subset of Bitcoiners that have done very well? And the same would be said in Australia or the UK or any other place. How do you think that might play out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've had the conversations with non-Bitcoiners about this, because when I've been talking to people about how eventually Bitcoin could become the world currency, they're like, oh, but then certain people will just have all of the Bitcoin and we'll have to, will the government then take from them and redistribute it? It's like, no, no, that's not how it works.
Wow, so that someone actually said that to you?
Yeah, it was, And I just think that it's the whole mind shift. Like, people think like, okay, someone works hard and they create a lot of value and there's money in the system and it's okay for it to be distributed against the person who created its will. Mm. People just think that that's fine.
Mm.
And personally, I don't think that's fine. I think there's issues with capitalism that people can get unbelievably wealthy and it's maybe not healthy, but I believe in property rights and people having the things that they've worked for. And yeah, I just think it will be a very messy shift, because especially in the UK, it's people are not thinking about property rights and you've worked hard for this, so that's fine. Or you've decided to buy Bitcoin at the very early days when it was risky. You've taken that risk and it's paid off. It's, oh, that's unfair. Well, I should get some of that now, because how am I going to survive?
Mm.
And
it's a really hard one, this, isn't it? So, Alex, I'm conscious of time. Do you have another 10 minutes or so?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Okay. We'll wrap it up after this. But so I was born in the UK, school, uni, everything, left when I was 24, lived in Singapore for 4 or 5 years, almost I was away for, back to London for a bit, then moved to Australia because my wife's Aussie. So in the last 15 years, I haven't really been in the UK very much. But I still have family back there and I'm involved in a number of bits and pieces that mean that I'm still very interested and also invested in the UK. And something came up particularly recently was the inheritance tax and managing some stuff between my brother, my sister, my mum, 40%. So at death, the British government takes 40% of someone's stuff. What? Now, interestingly, Australia is zero. There's no inheritance tax in Australia currently. That might change, of course. Any of this stuff could change. And in the UK, you can use things like trusts to navigate from a more tax efficient perspective, like assets from generation to generation. But it's still like it's extraordinary how much people are taxed. And I believe that the UK right now has the highest per capita quantity of millionaires leaving the country. So total volume, most are going out of China. You know, they're pilfering what they can out of the communist state and getting the hell out. Fair enough. But in the same sense, it's happening in the UK, a place of 65 million people or 70 million people or whatever it is now. What keeps you in England at this stage in your life when you're looking at things like this, where like you believe in property rights, you believe in being more productive, you've now got a sound money that you know is going to be yours in the future? Are you concerned about how things are going, and what is it like there?
Yeah, it's so I was in London at the weekend with my girlfriend, and she is definitely more positive, has a more positive outlook about things, whereas I'm like, this is a bit of a dump. And but we came home and she's like, yeah, London's really gone downhill.
Wow.
And she actually works there in the week, but at the weekend it was kind of quite eye-opening. We were sat in a pub in Vauxhall, which is not a terrible area, as far as I'm aware. I mean, I don't know London that well, but we're sat in a nice pub, see a biker gang go down the street with black hockey masks. It's just like, what is this place? It's
Wow.
insane how much it's deteriorating. And yeah, the taxes are just going crazy. Labour are just destroying everything, and people do want to leave. Personally, I'd love to leave. I'd love to go live in Portugal or somewhere like that. I've always had an issue living in the UK because the sort of leisure activities don't really appeal to me. I want to be going up mountains and going skiing and going to the beach and things like that. So it's always been a struggle for me from that point of view. But now that there are other opportunities because of Bitcoin and being a sort of money that you can take with you anywhere, and sort of, it gives you that more, gives you that flexibility. It definitely makes me want to leave, but at the same time, I need to save some more, stack some more sats before I can.
No, and fair enough. I have every confidence that if you chose to pick up and go, then you could. And the cool thing that you've already taught me in this conversation is like, you're willing to take risks, you're willing to say I was wrong about something, you're willing to actually like put yourself out there. Those are all like critical factors to help make a big move if you were to choose to do that. And equally, the more content you create, the more you work for a Bitcoin business, the more Bitcoin you stack, you are, in a sense, digitally native. Like, you're not selling coffees in a coffee shop. You're not running a factory somewhere. You're not like physically tied to an office, which has got you on this crazy employment contract. It's like, actually, you could probably do what you're doing for Bitcoin Collective from Lisbon and fly back to London when you need to be there. I'm not saying that will happen, but yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's true
It's,
though.
yeah, it's very hard to know what's real. In some ways, the newspaper headlines will say, oh, this is going on and this is so bad and blah 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 blah, and you're like, is it? And as soon as you put your phone down, you walk outside, everything's pretty chilled. You know what I mean? It's like it's not actually that crazy. I mean, obviously, seeing I used to live in Brixton actually, so I know Vauxhall quite well. You wouldn't have had dudes on fucking mopeds with masks on driving around 10 years ago when I used to live there. No fucking way. So that's definitely a change, but isn't this also, as part of this Bitcoin research that we've all done, like this is the fourth turning. This is what happens when you live on a lie for like 50 plus years, when people are able to print their own money. There's no more goods and services in the system. They're just more monetary units, and no one's salary keeps up with the speed that they print them at. So everyone's getting poorer, and as a result, crime rises. It's really simple. It doesn't make sense to go to work any longer. Because you're going to tax me on the official income that I make. That means that my real wages are worse than what they were a year ago or 5 years ago. And it's unsurprising that people turn to nihilism, for example, as a mindset. Our big challenge, though, in some ways, as people who've gone down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, is to bring people with us in a way that meets them where they're at and doesn't alienate them from the future potential. So I personally believe that the benefits that we've seen thus far, like past performance is not guaranteeing future performance. It's like we haven't even got going, really. And so if you jumped on the Bitcoin bandwagon now, what you'll see over the next 5 years will be even better than what's happened in the last 5 years. But people need to make that step, and you can't do that for them. So yeah, it's a very interesting time, isn't it? Well, Alex, thank you so much for your time today. I would love to just open it up to you. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you would like to mention, or anything that resonated that you want to mention?
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and joining the podcast. I really appreciate it and love learning from people.
Thanks for having
I'm
me.
gonna make a shout out to, is it the Big Boss Bear?
Yes.
If I remember that correctly, I thought I'd better go and check my Telegram. But yeah, who contacted me and said, Jake, you should have a chat with Alex on the podcast. So appreciate you getting us in touch. Thanks, mate. Final question is, where can people reach out and get in touch if they want to get if they want to contact you?
I'm on X and YouTube. It's just Alex Glass, I think.
Okay. Awesome. And I'll pop that in the show notes, no worries. Well, Alex, thanks so much for your time today.
Nice one. Thanks, Jake.
My pleasure. Thank you.